You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
Is the plague at all a threat in the modern day?
No.
The Wire.
Since COVID-19 shocked the global health system with the impacts of a lack of pandemic preparedness, the World Health Assembly has undertaken intense negotiations to help develop a stronger and more equitable response to future pandemics. Today, I spoke with the chief scientist at TOA and founder of Te Pūnaha Matatini, Sean Hendy, about the pandemic treaty adopted by the World Health Organization and how New Zealand should be preparing for future health crises. Here is that interview. Member states of the World Health Organization have now formally adopted by consensus the world's first pandemic agreement. In your view, what are the greatest benefits to global health cooperation that will be derived from the wide acceptance of this treaty?
I think there's two benefits from a world point of view. I mean, the main one, is specifically if you're a Kiwi, you know, from New Zealand's perspective, is just greater cooperation around surveillance. You know, New Zealand, we're not really a hotspot for some of the viruses that could potentially trigger a global pandemic, but we're only a plane flight away from these places, and so we really rely on other countries to do that surveillance for us, and putting together an international agreement that talks about how we're going to do it, how we're going to cooperate on you know, watching out for potentially pandemic-causing pathogens is really important to us as a country. I think that the kind of the second big benefit from a global perspective is an agreement to collaborate and cooperate much more on the treatments and the vaccines that might be developed during a pandemic. We know that although it was, you know, the vaccine development was impressively fast in the COVID-19 pandemic. You know, the vaccines were being deployed, you know, within a year of that pandemic being declared. The distribution was very unequal. Countries that received the vaccines first were those countries that had the manufacturing capacity, and they tended to be, you know, advanced economies, the United States, Europe. And it took a long time for those vaccines to make their way out into the rest of the world. And so this agreement will really ramp up the sharing of those vaccines so that more of the global supply becomes available to developing countries earlier.
How does the withdrawal of commitment by the United States negatively impact global efforts to prepare for future health crises?
Yeah, I mean, it's really disappointing that the United States has pulled out of this agreement. It pulled out from actually negotiating once the Trump administration came into power. I think one of the things that, you know, there's a couple of reasons why we should be alarmed by that. I mean, first of all, you know, the US is the preeminent scientific country in the world. It's where a lot of the important science gets done. You know, tests get developed in the United States, vaccines get developed there, and so not having the US's cooperation around developing technologies is really disappointing. And I think the second thing is we do know that pandemic viruses do arise in the United States from time to time, and at the moment we're all very nervous about the H5N1 avian influenza, which is circulating in the US, and in particular, it's made it into some of the dairy herds in the United States, and it's spilling over into dairy workers. And that gives this virus the opportunity to recombine with human influenza. And if that happened, we'd very rapidly see a very dangerous influenza virus circulating in the US and potentially spilling over into a pandemic virus. And so the fact that the US is not going to cooperate and, in fact, is shutting down a lot of its public health capacity is a concern.
In what ways have global crises like climate change, food insecurity and conflict-driven displacement been incorporated into the development of this global health response to future pandemics?
Yeah, I think this new agreement recognises that these things are increasing the risk of global pandemics. We know that you know, there's an enormous number of viruses in the in natural habitat. You know, bats, for example, there are millions and millions of coronaviruses in wild bat populations that we've never been exposed to as human beings. Now, most of those viruses are not going to cause illness in humans, but it just takes a small fraction of them to figure out how to spread amongst us, spread from human to human, and we've got another pandemic. And so as climate change disrupts the habitat, the natural habitat of animals such as bats, as we encroach on their habitat for agriculture, for example, or deforestation, then we're bringing those viruses closer to us, closer to human society. And we know just from observation that we're increasing the risk of a pandemic virus by 1 to 2% every year as climate change and deforestation and habitat destruction continues.
Senior lecturer at the University of Canterbury, Dr. Jalal Mohammed, highlighted the exacerbated impact of pandemics on Pacific nations, in particular due to their reliance on international tourists, their fragile health systems, and their historic underinvestment in healthcare. Do you think the treaty as it stands does enough to address the health inequities faced by Pacific populations?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's far enough, but it's a good starting point. We really do need to think of infectious disease as a global problem, and not just a problem that affects us as individuals or even as individual countries. It is a global problem. If one part of the world has health vulnerabilities, then all of us do globally. So while I think this treaty is a good starting point, there's still a big role for New Zealand to play in enhancing health. Public health in particular in Pacific nations. And, we did that to a certain extent during the COVID-19 pandemic, and it's something I hope that we would look to increase our efforts in over coming decades.
The Royal Commission has made 39 recommendations on pandemic preparedness for implementation by the New Zealand government, ranging from better coordination through a dedicated agency and a specific pandemic plan, to preparation across various sectors, including economy, justice and education. What do you believe should be the highest priority for the government in order to prepare for the next pandemic?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is actually that we bring some transparency to what's being done. I think this treaty will help do that because we'll be required to report on our preparedness internationally. At the moment, we don't know what the government is doing in response to the Royal Commission's recommendations, but the report has been made publicly available, but the government's not reporting back on what it's doing. So I think the most important thing at this stage is transparency. We should all be keeping an eye on how ready we are and, holding our politicians to account. We weren't well prepared coming into the COVID-19 pandemic. And although, some experts were aware of that, I think the general public was probably a bit taken aback at our lack of preparedness. And that meant we had to resort to really drastic action like lockdowns. It would be really nice to be in a position to have other options going into the next pandemic. And that'll only really come about if we insist that our politicians are building preparedness and resilience.
Do you have any concerns about the New Zealand public's potential disengagement with government regulations reflective of those carried out during COVID-19?
Yeah, I do think that people have become a bit jaded over what happened during the COVID-19 pandemic. I mean, first of all, we responded magnificently in the early stages of the pandemic. People did really well, and we became one of the few countries that were able to eliminate the COVID-19 virus that causes COVID-19. So that was really impressive. But as the pandemic dragged on, we were exposed to more and more misinformation, a lot of which was coming out of the United States with its dysfunctional political system. And unfortunately, some New Zealanders have been heavily influenced by that. And it does worry me that we won't see the same sort of solidarity and community resilience that we had early on in the COVID-19 pandemic should we face up to a pandemic again.
What kind of support are you hoping to receive for the health sector in today's budget announcement from the central government?
Yeah, look, I'm not hugely optimistic. I mean, the messaging has been that we're in very tight conditions and that we shouldn't expect to see a lot of new investment. But I just, public health pays for itself, really. The more you invest in public health, the less you have to invest in the ambulances at the bottom of the cliff. So I think public health investment is always a good investment. And I would really like to see us doubling down on the public health capacity, especially that we built during the pandemic. We certainly came out of the pandemic with a stronger public health system than we went into it with. And I'm a bit worried that some of that capacity and capability is going to dissipate. And so I'd like to see some investment in our public health infrastructure, although I'm not holding out a lot of hope for this particular budget.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.